Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm here with Sarah McGewley. And we're going to talk to Holly Throsby about her new book, Goodwood. Welcome, Holly.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I think it's a little unfair of someone to have had a successful career in music and to then to cross over into areas where I like to play and many other aspiring writers like to play and then start to do very well in that area as well. Are you doing a little bit greedy here in the creative space?
I didn't mean to take up the creative space in such a way. But thanks, I think.
The podcast's been going from 30 seconds and you've got Holly Throsby apologising
yeah.
for writing a book.
Thanks. I think that was a compliment. But I'm just...
Yeah, you can find a compliment.
Yeah.
Just dig it
out. I'm optimistic, so I'm going for the compliment.
Well, it is. I remember hearing a comment made that Margaret Atwood made about sitting at a dinner table with finding herself next to a brain surgeon, and he was yapping on about how excellent he was, and eventually he said, "Well, what? When I retire, I feel like I'm going to settle down and write a novel, just not one out." And Margaret Atwood turned to him and said, "Yeah, when I retire, I'm going to start doing brain surgery." So it is one of the.
I love her. Yeah. I think she's fantastic.
But it is something. When I was reading the paper on the weekend, that it was something that you took up when you were pregnant.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But it was something that was behind the scenes, germinating for a long time before that.
In terms of always having very strongly wanted to do it, I think anyone who's written a book, as I now know, I think you only complete a book when you really want to, because it's a huge amount of work. And I hadn't quite foresaw how focused and how much, you know, how much of a focused effort it would be. Because having written songs, it's quite a short form. So you kind of can... I mean, the way I write songs is quite slow as well. Like, I might have a melody and then just walk around with it in my head and slowly write lyrics to it. And sometimes they come out quickly, but other times you can kind of just carry them around with you and then they're sort of ready in their 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, you know, there's not that many lyrics involved. And I've always been very interested in lyrics, and that's always been something that has been at the forefront of my mind while songwriting. I want them to be good, and I want to be proud of the lyrics. But in terms of writing a book, I'd thought about it a lot, but not to the point of actually sitting down and start and setting off until this one came along in my mind.
So did you have a beginning, middle and end that just popped into your head, or did you have
No, not at all. I had nothing of either of those, any of those things. I had a few disparate ideas about setting and about my main character, and all the other things came about as I'd started to sit down and write kind of a series of vignettes, I think, about this character and about this town. Mm. And it was only then that the ideas for what would actually happen in the town started germinating. And it wasn't until I'd sort of set off onto that first chapter, which is really quite close to what the first chapter is, like the first chapter I wrote in the first draft, in terms of the content. I mean, I sort of shifted things, but I thought, okay, these people are going to go missing, but I didn't know what was going to happen to them. So I kind of worked that out as I was writing it.
And do you have any, like, a lot of writers will sort of look back on books that they or read or art that they've experienced in their past and go, I think this has come from that, or it's germinated from something. Is there any writing that you read or any form of art that has sort of...
Yeah, there's a lot of things that when I... And some of them were sort of unconscious, but when I think back on writing Goodwood, I think, oh, that was in my mind. It's sort of much like, I think, when you wake up from a dream and you think, oh, the dream was about this after you've thought about it for the day, but where it went, you know, in the morning you weren't quite sure. But I think there are a huge amount of things come to mind now and I look back on it. For example, In Cold Blood by Truman Capote is a book that I loved and is actually referenced in Goodwood. The character of Jean's Nan quotes a thing about it, which is in Cold Blood, about how farming's a chancy business, and she sort of says that several times in the book. It's like a catchphrase of hers. And there's a band called The Handsome Family, which are from Albuquerque in New Mexico, and I love their stuff. It's really dark but very funny and very literal, literate. And there's a song called The Forgotten Lake by The Handsome Family, which I kind of vaguely quote as well in the book, just one line of it. And I feel like there's a lot of sort of music and books. I really love The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Genedes, and I love Richard Yates's books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I feel like those are probably the things that were influencing me in terms of...
They have a kind of a closed area where all the drama happens.
Yeah, and there's a nostalgia and kind of horrifying things that are treated in a lighter way. They've got quite a kind of light rhythmic touch that I feel you can deal with this subject matter that's just very dark and quite appalling, but still have this... somehow a sense of optimism, which I wanted. I didn't want it to be this very, very dark piece. I wanted it to be filtered through Jean, the narrator, who has obviously got this sort of sense of a slightly wry take on the world, which I think gives the book a tone that doesn't drag you down when you're reading it. So you can sort of be dealing with, you know, violence and abuse and ultimately, without wanting to give any spoilers, you know, these people that may or may not be found. And I think those things are quite dark, but I feel like Goodwood is somehow a nice place still. a nice place to sort of be amidst all of those things.
I wanted to ask, kind of as an add-on from what might have inspired you, was there a particular town that inspired Goodwood? Because it feels like such a real place and so much love has gone into creating it.
It is a very real place in my mind, that's for sure. And I when I was writing it, I felt very much like I was living there myself. But I have done a lot of recording of my records on the south coast of New South Wales. In my mind, Goodwood is located inland from the south coast of New South Wales, because it is a river town as opposed to being a beach town. But my experiences in places like Jamboree and the Kangaroo Valley and Milton and Braidwood and, you know, which are all towns in a similar area. And even I did a lot of recording on the Southern Highlands as well, so in a place called Wilds Meadow, which is between Robertson and Burrawang and Fitzroy Falls. So it's an amalgamation of towns in that kind of area, with a couple of references to Newcastle and the Central Coast, which is... only because I've spent a lot of time there with family. The Gather River is a play on the Hunter River for me. And so there's a lot of kind of, for me, like kind of things that kind of made me smile. But yeah, to me, it's a South Coast New South Wales setting, which I think it's very clearly New South Wales because of references to Resch's,
yeah.
The beer, which is only served on tap in New South Wales, in case anyone didn't know that.
And can we talk about the time that it's set? So,
yeah.
92, which, I mean, it has such a great sense of that time, but why did you choose to set it then? Like, just out of curiosity, really, because it's perfect.
I think, for me, 1992 was an epic time. I mean, I was younger than Jean is in the book. I was in year 8 in 1992, so I was 13. But I think that age... you know, year 7's hard and you're in a bit of a blur and like, oh, this is, how am I going to deal with my newfound situation and this new peer group? But I think by the time I got to year 8, I was sort of like, who am I and what do I like and what things am I interested in? And it was very formative in terms of amazing music that came out in that year. And there's a certain sort of loss of innocence that I think happened in New South Wales in that year in terms of some major crimes that are referenced in Goodwood. And I think that for me, it was a combination with a very exciting time and a very scary time. Because I think when you're that age, you take a lot of stuff on. And I certainly did emotionally take a lot of stuff on that was sort of happening in the world. And so I felt it was the right time to have Jean be slightly advanced in terms of age that I was, but in the same kind of space.
Yeah. I mean, I've read it twice now. I read it a while ago when I first got the proof, and then I read it again over the weekend. And the thing that really, like, I think most of the books you really love in your life, you love them because even when they finish, there's a sense that they're still going on, like they have no real ending. And I am haunted by some of the things that I imagine happening after this book has ended, like these characters that you've created and this situation, like I can't even ask you now because it'll all be spoilers and we'll have to wait till after the podcast, but like, do these characters live on for you and do you have imaginings of what happens next?
It was important to me. I find endings in books very important, and I think it goes hand in hand with the notion of the tension created with people being missing, that there's this sort of overhanging tension, which I really wanted to explore. I was really, I still am quite traumatised by the missing plane, you know, the Malaysian missing plane. I was reading about it this morning, and this is an amateur detective who's been on the scent of it and combing beaches in, you know, South Africa. And I find that I could really relate to him. I was sort of thinking, I can imagine wanting to search the world for that plane, because I feel like things like that you can't let it go in a way. And
it's worse not to know.
It's kind of, yeah. And I feel so much for the families of the people that are on that plane. And, you know, the Mary Celeste and these aviation or shipping things that happen that I find just really... And the Mary Celeste was in my mind with Bart, with just finding a ghost boat and who knows where these people, where he is or where these people are. But I think for me, the ending of Goodwood, it is left quite open, and I did want to feel like you're still in the middle of it in a way. That's why I tend to write short songs, because you kind of want to go back and play them again. You know, like, and I feel like that's... It's sort of a narrative function, but it's also something that I personally really relate to, that feeling of wanting to know.
Yeah.
Tim Winton was... there was an article about him in the paper on the weekend, and he gets a lot of flack for his endings, because he just...
Why?
He often just stops.
Right.
And leaves it unresolved, and he just goes, I do it on purpose. I want people to wander away.
Yeah.
He said, would people come up to me 10 years after I've written something and go, what happened? Would they be doing that if I told them? No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't have it in their head.
Mm.
You know, having a nice resolution means, oh, that's closed. I don't have to think about that again.
Though there is, like, you would never say that this book is unfinished. Like,
no,
you don't abruptly
end it. It's resolved.
It's just really open. Like,
yeah.
There's so much still... There are so many characters that, while the central story is completed, you wonder what happens to them. Like, which is great, because, you know, you finish the book and it's still alive. Like, I can still sit here wondering, and I can't even mention a character, because, like...
Will you be...
We're talking after this podcast, more in depth.
Now that Sarah's been speaking this way, is there any chance of another book set in Goodwood, or is there...
I am working on a new book, and I'm four chapters in, and I'm setting it in Cedar Valley, which is the town south of Goodwood, which is mentioned a handful of times in Goodwood. It's the town where a character called Evie's family is, her grandmother lives. It's a town where Dave O'Kullstrom, who's a character, his mother drinks at this town on her way home from work. And I guess potentially I had that same feeling, having finished it, that I wasn't quite finished with the area and with the kind of... And I don't think that there will be main characters from Goodwood turning up in Cedar Valley, but I am exploring these ideas of linking them in some ways, because I don't know, I wasn't quite ready to leave either. I think, which is potentially why it is.
I love that when books pass each other. Like, you just get, you can see, oh, there's the other book.
Well, I remember
it's off in the distance.
When I was potentially the world's biggest fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
yes.
And the crossover episodes with Angel, just they lit up my world.
I'm with you 100%. Can we talk a bit about, because I think this is a really, we tend to, in the bookselling industry, have to categorize books and stick them in certain genres and stuff, but I think Goodwood kind of, it straddles a lot of different areas, and it's really hard to, like, for instance, I do a newsletter for crime and a newsletter for young adult, and I just put it in both because I feel like it could be both. It could, and it isn't either, really. Did you have an audience in mind when you were writing?
No. I think when the idea was germinating, I was attracted to young adult fiction because of the fact that I really like books that have sort of innocent/naive narrators. Like, some of my favourite books are The Member of the Wedding by Carson McCullers, or Timbuktu by Paul Auster, which is about a dog. But I mean, books that are sort of centred on these sort of children or animals, or these sort of people that are on the cusp of adulthood, I find really fascinating for how that enables adult readers to read those stories. And I read an interesting thing that Joyce Carol Oates was saying the other day about the way that young adult fiction is is these days that we could therefore reclassify books like To Kill a Mockingbird or Lord of the Flies or, you know, as young adult fiction. And I think in a lot of ways that's true. But at the same time, the themes in both of those books and the themes in Goodwood are probably a bit much and a bit heavy for a young adult audience. And as soon as I started writing it, I thought, well, this is, you know, this is touching on topics like adult themes, in inverted commas. But I think that as a teenager, I would have really appreciated to read a story like that. Like, and I wanted to give that to readers.
Well, before YA was a thing, that's what teenagers did. They read up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was reading The Catcher in the Rye, and I loved On the Road, and I love these kind of books that I thought were very cool, but that were about these sort of had these young characters, but you know, obviously a very literary and adult space. Mm. But yeah, there's sort of an opportunity, I think, for readers to enjoy that innocence that they no longer have, and sort of be able to filter the story through that in a nice way in their own mind.
Well, that's why we go back to so many coming of age stories.
Exactly.
It's an interesting time in a person's life, so it's an interesting storytelling space. But it's interesting that you mentioned To Kill a Mockingbird, because when I was reading Goodwood, not that they're similar in any way, but there were just elements like you've got a young girl narrator, not obviously as young as Scout, but like young girl called Jane, and like there's the small town, and there's, you know, the gossipy element of the, you know, all of the old biddies in To Kill a Mockingbird. There's like a sort of element of that. And then there was a little hidey hole in the tree. And it was just like little callbacks, like you would have in music, for example, where it's just to evoke a sense of something familiar while doing something really different.
Yeah, well, I think definitely that was an influential book for me. I haven't actually read it for a long time, but I did reread the first chapter of it when I was writing Goodwood. And I don't think you get many people that don't like that book. It's so formative for so many readers, I think. But then again, I think it's so American.
It's so different.
I felt like Goodwood was, the thing that I really wanted to bring was a very strong Australian-ness to it. Of course it is very different in a lot of ways, but I think the thing I found interesting about that book, I think, is just a young person dealing with very grown up ideas and themes and not really understanding them.
And the
effect on a town. Yeah.
I really like when a story can be completely different from another story, but have that little echo that just kind of connects.
Yeah. And I think in terms of songwriting, I felt there is quite a lot of, repetition in Goodwood in terms of phrases and things like that to me are almost like a bit of a chorus that certain characters have, because as a songwriter you get very used to always returning to a chorus and I feel like that was probably unconscious, but I do notice it when I read it again after it was sort of all finished and tried to step away.
So with going back to the actual process, with writing lyrics, I imagine that in your mind there's a larger story around the words that you say, like there's things that are unsaid. In writing a novel, you still have that opportunity. There's still things unsaid that are outside, but you do have such a massive canvas to fill in. Did you learn to... novel writing isn't something that people just walk into, generally, and you seem to have done, but did you learn how to construct it as you did it, or was like how did you go about that process, because it is a daunting process?
Yes, I did learn as I was sort of going. I kept notes as to where I was in terms of the story, but I often was very lost, but writing the first draft was quite quickly. I did it quite quickly. I have read a bit about other authors writing, and it was over about 8 months, which seems like it was, because I worked very focused on it. And I tried to be very sort of instinctive about how the story came out and the sort of pacing that felt right at the time.
Yeah.
When I read back on that first draft, it was obvious that things needed to be shifted around, and I did a bit of that in writing the second draft. But yeah, I just went with what I felt was a good pace of revelation.
So a lot of people get stuck on that first 30 50 pages and they rewrite it and rewrite and rewrite until they get it right and then move on to the next one. You just,
no,
just
I
moved
went,
on.
Yeah, I just moved on, knowing that things were like not quite right in that section. But I felt like I wanted to run with the story and I wanted to run with where I felt it was going, and I was excited to kind of get it out. Like the days where I felt like I made this progress and these things had sort of come about, or I'd had an idea and I just wanted to get it down. That was very much how I did the first draft.
Is this tie in with how you make an album? Like, how did you get the confidence just to go, oh, it'll work out in the end, I'll fix it up later on?
In terms of the confidence, I was very much lacking that in the first draft. And I didn't tell people that I was doing it. I told some very close friends and my partner, obviously, that I was doing it, but I very much resisted being like, oh, I'm writing a book, because I thought, oh, I don't know if I'm going to finish this. I don't know if I'm going to... And if I do finish, I don't know if it's going to be good. Like, I wasn't that confident when I was writing the first draft. When I read it again about 10 months after I'd put it in a drawer and put it away, it was more in order than I thought it would be. And there were some parts when I thought, this has got promise, and other parts that I thought, this is just terrible. And I can't wait to delete those bits.
So you left it for 10 months?
I left it for 10 months,
wow.
Yeah. I didn't mean to leave it for 10 months. I meant to leave it for 3, but I didn't realise that having a baby would be quite a lot of work. And so after, you know, when my baby was... Because I think I put it aside, I had about 3 or 4 weeks left of my pregnancy. And then by that stage, it's just so uncomfortable, you just want to lie down. And then I had my daughter and... You know, two months or 3 months after that, I was, there's no way that I was gonna be getting a book out. And so yeah, it was 10 months in the end. I remember looking at the date that last saved on my laptop date, and it was 10 months.
Did were things working in the background in your mind when you came back to it, or it was just gone?
Honestly, I was largely just gone. I was so consumed with, you know, being a new mother and, you know, breastfeeding and trying to sleep, and I wasn't. In that time, I wasn't reading much at all. I was you're just so tired. It was a very good mental break, I think.
So if you have a few novels in you, then you're going to have each novel tie in with a pregnancy and a child?
I don't know about that. I might have to think about something else.
It does seem a bit of getting your how to write book together and saying, first, Get pregnant.
Okay, but you know, this is not going to work for men, is it?
It sounds like a stressful way to have done it, but it resulted in a really excellent book.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
Well, not only us, but you're getting great reviews out there, and people are talking about it. But the thing I want booksellers who may be listening to this to understand is they need to have a lot of copies. They need to have some in the YA, is that right? Some in the YA, some in the crime, some in the Australian section, some in your general fiction. So you just have to have it all.
You can put it on all the shelves. Maybe not the picture bookshelf, but it's got a map.
So, yeah. So it's illustrated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Holly, thank you very much for coming and talking to us.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Holly Throgby's book, Goodwood, is available at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.